In this live panel, I'm talking to Miko Peled and Ivan Noyes about the war in Israel. Miko Peled is an author, activist, pro-Palestinian activist, and has written, like I said, written books on this subject. His grandfather signed Israel's Declaration of Independence. Ivan Noyes was a UK Member of Parliament for over 20 years, and during that time was a minister for the Middle East. So in this conversation, I'm going to ask a question, we'll give each of you a chance to respond. So let's go straight in. Miko, are Hamas to blame?
Are Hamas to blame for what?
For the war in Israel, the current war.
No, of course not. The war did not begin on October the 7th. The war began in 1948, or shortly before 1948, when the Zionist movement declared war on the Palestinian people and established an apartheid state in Palestine. And ever since then, there's been an ongoing assault on the Palestinian people, who have never had a military force, never had a tank, never had an army. And what we're seeing now is a flare-up, because over the years, there have been times when there was more quiet and times when we've seen the flare-ups. And so what we're seeing now is another flare-up of this ongoing war against the Palestinian people. And in this particular case, this particular flare-up was initiated, of course, by the attack from from the Gaza Strip. But this is not a war. This is one part of a much longer war. And it's ridiculous to blame the Palestinians for the war, since they have been on the receiving end of enormous amounts of violence.
I think a lot of people don't blame the Palestinians. I think they blame Hamas.
No, Hamas is a group of Palestinians. Hamas is one group. The fact that they happen to be Hamas, they could have been from another group. It doesn't matter. As a resistance organization, these are Palestinians who came out of Gaza. And so whether you blame the Palestinians who are members of Hamas or you blame Palestinians who are a member of another faction, the resistance would not have been, it's not like there would not have been resistance from Palestinians if Hamas did not exist. And so this particular, event, these particular fighters happen to be affiliated with Hamas, but I don't think it's that important. I think what's important is that these are Palestinians who are engaging in an act of resistance, as all oppressed people have the right to do.
Yeah.
Well, Miko, you describe this as a flare-up. Hamas burnt and beheaded babies. They targeted hundreds of young people at a peace festival, and they paraded a woman that was raped through the streets of Gaza, which you then describe as a flare-up. Let's talk about history. The United Nations declared two states in 1948. A Jewish state and an Arab state. Within 24 hours, 48 hours of that, the Arab states tried to invade the Jewish state. That's the truth in terms of two states. It began with two states, as declared by the world, and the Arab world was not prepared to accept that. If you then wind the clock forward many, many decades, you know full well that Ehud Barak, Olmert, offered the Palestinians 99.9% of what they claimed to have wanted in terms of a two-state solution. And Arafat walked away from those respective peace processes. And isn't it true that the real issue here is Hamas don't even want a two-state solution? Hamas are committed to a one-state solution, which is a Palestinian state without any Jews in it. And is it also not true that Hamas are not simply some independent entity? They're controlled by a rogue state called Iran. Is that not factually correct? So we need to differentiate between the Palestinian people and the actions of a terrorist organization, Hamas. You talk about occupation. In 2005, Israel left Gaza unilaterally because the world asked them to do so. Within days, Hamas had taken over Gaza. And the rocket started, the attack started, the terrorism started. And for those who complain about the constraints and the restrictions placed on Gaza, what October the 7th demonstrated was, unfortunately, was that those constrictions and restraints, although they failed dismally on that day, were necessary. The brutality that were committed, by the way, not against soldiers or military personnel, even that would have been unjustified. This was against innocent civilians, beheading, burning, babies, targeting young people. This was the worst loss of Jewish life since the Holocaust and the most heinous acts of violence. And in your opening remarks, all you were able to do was talk about a flare-up. I mean, I find that extraordinary.
Well, I find extraordinary that you just that you started and ended this you know list of things that are have been proven to be untrue and are known to be untrue from start to finish, but you started and finished with what has been refuted very early on, and that is the story of the beheading and the rape. So these two claims that came out very early on after October 7th were lies, and they have been proven to be lies, and they have been refuted, and yet you repeat them over and over again. So I think that is indicative.
You deny that babies were found in ovens.
I did not interrupt you.
Okay.
I did not interrupt you. I listened to your diatribe of lies patiently. So now you're going to have to afford me the same courtesy. So you began and end by repeating lies that have been refuted several times over and over again, even by the Israeli media. So that is, we need to put that to rest. Now, your recount, your revisionist history, you know, has nothing to do with reality. And I don't see any point in going point by point by point. It would be very easily done to refute every single one of the claims you made about the history. None of it is history. It's all fiction. First of all, if you want to talk about the partition plan was a plan that was imposed on Palestinians. There was no reason for them to accept it, number one. And number two, immediately after November the 29th, by early December, the Israeli Zionist militias already began with massive campaigns of ethnic cleansing and massacres. So we know this historically. This has been stated by Israeli historians. So this is also not true. And of course, it wasn't until the British left in May, some 6 months later, when almost more than half of the Palestinians were forcibly evicted from Palestine, that the Arab armies tried and failed to come in and help the Palestinians. So, I mean, it's very easy to sit there and repeat all these ridiculous lies and then accept and then use that as an argument. But nothing you said is true. Everything you said is easily refutable, as I believe I just did, but although maybe not every single detail. And I go back to the very claim that I made earlier, that a war that was declared against the Palestinian people is continuing. The Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip, whether they are members of one faction or another, makes no difference. Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip came out because Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip have been engaged in resistance long before Hamas. The Gaza Strip has been subjected to enormous amounts of violence by the State of Israel going back to the early 1950s, as soon as the Gaza Strip was established. And so none of this is new, and this has nothing to do with a particular faction.
Mika, can I ask you, based on October the 7th, I mean, you mentioned there was a flare-up, but what do you believe happened? Because you said you didn't believe that people were raped or people, what do you believe really happened then?
The news, well, we know what happened. We know that fighters out of the Gaza Strip came out and occupied, I believe, 22 cities and kibbutzim and settlements in the southern part of the country. We know now, as more and more evidence is coming out by Israeli witnesses, that is obvious, it's in the Israeli press. I don't know if you read Hebrew, but it's in the Israeli press, that a great number of the Israeli casualties were actually caused by the Israeli military firing. There was one witness in Kibbutz Be'eri who actually saw them shelling houses where there were hostages. We know now, we've heard this more than once in the Israeli papers, that the fighter helicopters, the war helicopters that tried to attack the Palestinian fighters early on, were not able to differentiate between the Palestinian fighters and civilians and killed a great many civilians. And we don't know for sure what happened during the music festival, although we do know that there was some, that tragically people died, and there were definitely casualties as a result of Israelis firing, the Israeli military firing at the time. So we don't know the full extent of the details of what happened as a result.
You're saying that the idea
we do now, excuse me, but we do know this. We do know this. Excuse me. I did not interrupt you. I don't know why you're interrupting me. We do know very well that the declared objective of this attack on October the 7th was to take hostages, to take prisoners, and then have an exchange, a prisoner exchange, in order to release the thousands of Palestinians that Israel has hijacked and kidnapped and has taken, that has in custody, the vast majority of whom are either political prisoners or prisoners because they're Palestinians. And that was the objective. And so when you put together the fact that, number one, this was the declared objective. Number two, that these were trained and disciplined Muslim fighters. And number three, that we know for sure the Israeli, many of the victims were as a result of Israeli fire. I think it's very, very clear that all the accusations that were leveled against the Palestinians at this point are at best unclear and at worst, vicious lies.
Yeah, I think, Ivan, we need to give you a chance to respond.
Okay, so as I understand it, you're Jewish. So you were denying that babies were found in ovens. You are claiming that the idea is that babies were beheaded. You're claiming that the young people at the music or peace festival were targeted. You're claiming that the woman was raped and paraded through the streets of Gaza. You claim all of this was nonsense. And what happened predominantly on the 7th of October was caused by the Israeli Defense Forces. Is that really your narrative about October the 7th? That needs to be clear. Is that what you are saying happened on October the 7th? It was predominantly the responsibility, all those evil atrocities were predominantly the responsibility of the IDF. Is that what you said?
Well, that's just me saying it. This is coming. Much of this is coming out of the Israeli press. And you want to hear what I'm saying? What I am saying is that the stories about beheading and rape have been completely refuted.
Babies in ovens?
No, that was nonsense.
Babies in ovens. How do you feel about that?
That was all refuted. These were refuted everywhere. Look at the Israeli press. Look at everyone else that looked into this. These claims were early on refuted. And the fact that Zionists and others are repeating these vicious lies against the Palestinians is only to discredit the Palestinians. But we know for sure that none of that happened. It wouldn't make sense for it to happen anyway, if you think about it logically, but it didn't happen. It's been refuted. What we do know, and it's again not me saying, I'm looking at the facts, I'm looking at the reality, I'm reading the different sources that are out there providing information. And according to these sources, we know very well that a great deal of the Israeli casualties were caused by Israeli fire.
We don't know if and how many,
and if any at all, were killed by Palestinians. We don't know that because that has not yet been investigated.
All the world's security and diplomatic reporters were briefed and shown horrendous video footage of
by
the
who?
Consequences of Hamas's terrorism on that day.
By the Israelis. The Israelis are not showing the burning babies in the buildings.
You are in denial about babies being put in ovens and burnt.
I mean, I think
you are denying that. So let's just go back then. So to your other
babies put in ovens.
So you talk about occupation, and therefore the whole narrative is that this is all justified. You don't even use the word terrorists. You talk about fighters. How can it be justified? When in 2005, Israel unilaterally withdrew from Gaza and allowed the Palestinian people to have complete control over Gaza. There was no occupation, was there? In 2005, the Israelis left Gaza. The only reason there have had to be tough military constraint measures taken against Gaza is because of both the rocket attacks and the risks of horrendous terrorist atrocities like we eventually saw on the 7th of October. If you add to that Hamas's charter, which is not committed to a two-state solution, is it? Hamas's charter is committed to a one-state solution without any Jews in it, and certainly not a Jewish state. You also don't address the issue of Iran and Iran's sponsorship of Hamas, and indeed Hezbollah. You know full well these are not autonomous, independent freedom fighters. These are terrorist organizations controlled by a rogue state. So why are you so much in denial about reality? I don't doubt that for many ordinary Palestinians, life has been very, very tough over a long period of time. But the predominant cause of that is, first of all, dreadful leadership, a combination of corrupt and terrorist leadership. And the other reason is that, frankly, when Barak and Olmert, respectively, made an offer to the Palestinian leadership, which would give them almost everything they wanted in terms of what they claim to want, which is a two-state solution, the Palestinian leadership walked away from those offers. And you know why? because that would have meant full and final settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And what full and final settlement would have meant would have been the two-state solution that you and others claim to believe in. What they want is a one-state solution. They don't believe Hamas in a two-state solution. Do you agree with that? It's not their aspiration to have a fair two-state solution with Israel and the Palestinians living alongside each other in peace. That is not Hamas's objective.
Wait a second.
Is that correct or not?
Wait a second, Ivan. You mentioned before that you said that you believe Hamas is a terrorist organization, like the UK says. Do you believe that Hamas is a terrorist organization?
You know, you describe a fascinating version of history, except the problem is none of it is true. Let me tell you a story. On the fifth day...
Wait a second, can I just go back to my question?
I heard your question. Hold on. Yeah. Let me put this in context. On the fifth day of the 1967 war, my father, who was in uniform at the time, he was one of the generals of the IDF, one of the planners and the executors of the 1967 war. He stood up and he offered the very first meeting of the Israeli high command, he stood up and he talked about the possibility of what we know today is the two-state solution. He said, now we are strong, we are mighty, we are here to stay. We have a state on the vast majority of the land, but we do need to compromise and we do need to take into account the fact that there's another nation living here. And so he proposed what we know today is the two-state solution. And that was really the beginning of this movement of Zionist Israelis, many of whom used to hold important positions like my father and others, to promote this idea of a two-state solution, you know, where the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem would become a Palestinian state and the Palestinian citizens of Israel would receive, their fair, equal rights. As he was already saying these words, Israeli bulldozers were destroying Palestinian towns, destroying Palestinian neighborhoods in East Jerusalem, and Israel was building massive settlements in East Jerusalem and the West Bank, as he was saying these words. Now, he retired from the... Now, you know, his other general friends, Yitzhak Rabin and others who were his comrades in arms, took him aside and said, what are you talking about? Why would we even think of allowing the Arabs, they didn't say Palestinians then, the Arabs to establish some kind of an entity in those lands that are ours historically? These are ours. I mean, Zionists believe that all of Palestine is theirs. Why in the world would we do anything to give them any kind of rights or give it back, as the saying goes? And from that moment on until today, there has been a very clear declared policy by the state of Israel, by consecutive governments,
what about Oslo?
Parties, to make sure that a Palestinian state, that a two-state solution would be an impossibility, and they succeeded. Let me finish. And so from that moment on, because the 1967 war was not a separate occasion. It was another step. It was another chapter in the Zionist taking of Palestine. And so they finished the job, as they themselves said, that we finished the job of 1948. We took all of Palestine. Now it's ours. And they built and continue to build. And they haven't stopped building for a moment since 1967, since they took those territories. Build massively for Jews only in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. So the claim that somehow Israel was ever interested in a two-state solution is absurd. But my father and a small group of others, you know, continued to pursue this and became pariahs because of that. Mm-hmm. Now, to somehow blame the Palestinians... Now, so Israel de facto created a single state, albeit an apartheid state. The state of Israel now, I will get to your question about Hamas. I didn't forget. I will get to your question about Hamas. The state of Israel created a single state, which they call Israel, which is, we know, because Amnesty International told us in a report, is an apartheid state, but it is a state that includes all historic Palestine from the river to the sea. When Palestinians talk about a single state from the river to the sea, Zionists like yourself, who had never one second supported the idea of a two-state solution when you could have, are up in arms. How dare they want a single state? When Israel has been actually creating a single state, when the Zionist movement created a single state with rights only for Jewish people at the expense of Palestinians, with millions of Palestinians living in, you know, languishing in refugee camps, with people in the Gaza Strip being bombed on a regular basis for decades, this is not new. This savage genocidal attack that we're seeing right now in the Gaza Strip with thousands of civilians being killed is nothing new. You're talking about babies being burned and beheaded. What do you think happens to babies who are in buildings when these massive bombs fall on them? Do you not think their bodies disintegrate? Do you not think their heads are beheaded? And there are thousands of babies that have not yet been found because they're in the rubble suffocating to death because of policies that you support. So you have no right to talk about terrorism because you are a supporter of terrorism. Israel is the perpetrator of terrorism. Hamas is a legitimate resistance organization. Israel, Zionism, and people like yourself who support this terrorism, you are the supporter of terrorism. You are funders of terrorism, which is even worse. You provide material support to the genocide, the ethnic cleansing, and an apartheid state. You are no worse than those who supported apartheid in South Africa and other even worse regimes who committed genocide against other people. So for you to sit there and question me and question Palestinians and blame the Palestinian terrorists is the worst type of racist hypocrisy, which is typical, by the way, of Brits like yourself.
This is the truth.
You have no right to question me. You have no right to doubt the rights of Palestinians. You have no right to call Hamas or any other Palestinian a terrorist because you are a supporter of terrorism. You are a supporter of racism and genocide. That is the truth. You could have had a two-state solution, but you refused. You made everything possible to create a single state. But when Palestinians talk about a single state with equal rights, you are up in arms. Israel has created a single state, which is an apartheid state with no rights to Palestinians, and you are okay with that. You're okay with an apartheid state. You're not okay with a state with equal rights.
What is interesting is this is your reaction to a very simple question. Are Hamas a terrorist organization? All you can do is throw slogans and abuse.
I did not throw slogans. I recited history. I recounted history.
Let me deal with all the points you made, because you were given plenty of opportunities to speak and you chose to rant. Let's go through this. First of all, from the moment that the state of Israel
is
declared, I'm
just wondering, what is the purpose of this conversation?
Your points one by one.
I just wonder what the purpose of this entire interview is.
What from the
YouTube channel
to add different perspectives on the very, very sensitive and difficult issues that we're addressing.
But is this going to be posted somewhere? Is it going to be posted somewhere? Are you publishing it somewhere? Where is this going to be?
Yeah, we're going to post on YouTube. We're going to post on YouTube.
Right. Can we get on the substantive point?
What is the YouTube channel?
I'll send you the link afterwards.
Why are you asking this in the middle of the interview? Am I going to get the opportunity to respond?
Wait, let Ivan respond.
No, please, I was wondering where this was going in terms of...
Yeah, it's going to go on YouTube. Yeah, but wait, Ivan.
From the moment that the state of Israel was created, the Arab world was never reconciled to that fact. So from the moment Israel was created, they constantly saw its destruction. You talked about the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War. The Arab world was never reconciled. Now, what happened was, when it became clear that in a state-to-state war, the Arabs could never defeat Israel. They created terrorist organizations as an alternative, proxy organizations designed to fight Israel on a different basis, on a different footing. That's the first point to make. So the idea that you're in denial about is that the Arab world, from the moment Israel was created, was determined to invade and destroy that country, and 67 and 73 were necessary and just wars to defend the state of Israel. And I guess that when your dad bravely fought in the 67 war, he believed he was fighting a just war of self-defense. Or why was he there as a commander in the IDF? Because he believed he was fighting a just war. That's my first. The second point I would make to you is this. You talk about an apartheid state. Absolute nonsense. It's a one-person, one-vote country. As very recently, an Islamist party actually served in the government. There are Arab judges in the Supreme Court, one of whom actually sentenced a former Israeli prime minister to prison. So the idea that this is apartheid state is full of propaganda and it's a load of nonsense. One person, one vote. Apartheid South Africa never, ever allowed the black minority to have a vote. They certainly wouldn't have allowed Supreme Court justices. They certainly wouldn't have allowed the black community to have representatives in government. So this nonsense about apartheid needs to be known. Miko said, people like me have never supported a two-state solution. rubbish. You've not researched me. I absolutely supported the Oslo process, which you're in complete denial about. No Israeli apparently has ever authentically and genuinely believed in a two-state solution. So when Yitzhak Rabin stood on the lawn of the White House with Yasser Arafat, as much as he found it incredibly difficult to do so, and Bill Clinton, and said it's time that the violence is over, and committed himself to a different way forward, that is what happened. And subsequent to that, as I said to you, subsequent to the Oslo Accord, Rabin got tragically assassinated, we all know that. Barak and Olmert offered the Palestinians 99% of what they say they required to deliver a fair and just two-state solution. And on both occasions, the Palestinian leadership walked away from that. So how could, and by the way, at the time that they did that, they had Israeli public opinion with them. When did Israeli public opinion turn against the notion of a two-state solution? I'll tell you exactly when. In 2005, when Israel unilaterally withdrew from Gaza, as the world demanded and as the Palestinians demanded, and within days, Hamas overtook that territory, a terrorist organization, and from that day on, terrorized civilian populations in the state of Israel. That is what started to shift mainstream, middle-of-the-road Israeli public opinion against a two-state solution. But you're in complete denial, as though Israeli leaders have not sought, by the way, as I say, with public consent for much of the time, a two-state solution. The truth is that the reason the Palestinian leadership did not agree to the Olmert and Barak proposals is because it would have meant full and final resolution. In other words, they would have reconciled themselves to the fact that on a permanent basis, there was going to be a Jewish state called Israel. And they were not willing to do that, and they are still not willing to do that, because their true aspirations are from the river to the sea, which is a Palestinian state with no Jews in it. Iran are committed, you know this, they say it time and time again at the highest levels, to wipe Israel off the face of the map. It's a stated, explicit objective of the Iranian regime. So how on earth you can come on here, when you were asked the question, what interesting, what provoked your rage is when you were asked to answer a very simple question.
You did answer.
Are Hamas a terrorist organization, yes or no?
Well, the difference between me is I get historical context while you throw out all these political...
I just want to quickly go.
Why did you file? I want to know something. Why did you file the fight?
I'm not answering any questions. Why did you file the fight?
Ivan, can you ask that later? So Mika did answer your question before when you asked, is Hamas a terrorist organization? But I want to put forward the questions that I asked Mika because I want to give the fair chance. So there's two questions I asked Miko. Are Hamas to blame and is Hamas a terrorist organization? What's your response?
Hamas targeted civilians in the most brutal, unforgivable way on October the 7th. There has been no greater loss of Jewish life since the Holocaust and what happened. And the barbarity, frankly, was on a par with ISIS and probably worse. So if tomorrow Hamas were willing to lay down their arms and release the hostages, the war would be over. This is a just war and a war of self-defense. Because if this war was not fought, the threat that was there pre-October the 7th would continue to be there. And we saw the barbarity of the 7th of October. Any democracy, any government in a democracy, including in this country, the United Kingdom, would have had to wage a war of self-defense and a just war in response to what happened on the 7th of October. Brutality and barbarity that we have rarely seen in contemporary world events.
Really, I haven't noticed that issue.
Are they a terrorist organization?
They targeted civilians. The Israelis are targeting Hamas terrorists in a just war and a war of self-defense. That is the difference between these two actions.
So let's give Mika a chance to respond then.
Yes, you know, you talk about barbarity, but you're ignoring the bombs that Israel is dropping on civilians and the thousands of civilians that Israel has been killing on a regular basis. Again, not for the first time, and you're repeating the nonsense that has already been refuted, so I don't see the point of conversing with you directly. Do you have another question for me?
Yeah, let's move on to the next question. The next question is peace ever possible?
Oh, absolutely. I think that I referred earlier to the Amnesty International report on apartheid. So what Zionists like the other guests like to somehow, you know, ignore is the fact that Israel governs about 7 million Palestinians. Now, 2 million of these 7 million Palestinians happen to be citizens of Israel. And while they do enjoy voting rights, they are as is very well stated in the apartheid report, do live in an apartheid state, albeit Israel has different bureaucracies and different laws for the Palestinians who live in different places. The Palestinians who live in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip don't even live under military, you know, basically military occupation, so they have no rights whatsoever within that context of the apartheid state. But there's no question that there's a single state from the river to the sea, and that is the apartheid state of Israel. Now, and there's plenty of examples. You know, the Amnesty report is well documented, and they've worked on it for many, many years, and it should be you know, brought to light and used more often. Now, the possibility of peace between Israelis and Palestinians exists and this is why I and many others support what is known to be the supporters of Palestine. And this is really a misunderstanding or a misphrasing of what it is that people like myself and others stand for. Supporting Israel means supporting an apartheid regime and genocidal violence against Palestinians. We've seen that over 75 years. Supporting the cause for justice, for liberty, for equality in Palestine also means supporting the possibility of peace between Israelis and Palestinians. Israelis and Palestinians can live in peace under a regime that is not a racist, violent regime, under a regime that is not an apartheid state. When the apartheid state is dismantled, as I believe it will be very soon, when the apartheid state that you call Israel is dismantled and replaced with a free, democratic Palestine with equal rights, which is what Palestinians have been calling for decades, when that happens, we will see the possibility of Israelis and Palestinians living in peace in that land materialize, and then they can start to build this collaboration between these two nations, between Israelis and Palestinians. But as long as the apartheid state continues to exist, we will not be able to see peace, because as we see historically, and you talk about my father, I can tell you a great deal about my father. Historically, we see that peace has never been an objective of any Israeli government. War has been the objective, occupation and maintaining itself as the toughest player in the region. And I'll say it again, dismantling the apartheid state and creating a free democratic Palestine with equal rights is precisely the way we get to peace between Israelis and Palestinians. So it's definitely possible. It's definitely possible. And I believe it is. And I believe it is inevitable, actually.
Okay, Ivan, I want to give you a chance to respond, but as well as I want to ask you a question that Miko actually put forward. He mentioned Amnesty International, and he said their reports. What's your thoughts on that?
Like many other NGOs, I don't really respect the integrity or the independence of such organisations. I'm afraid they've been discredited time and time again in their lack of objectivity and
independence. You don't like them.
Transparency. The truth is that you cannot call a one person, one vote state where Arab parties have actually recently, Islamist parties actually, served in the government, where Supreme Court judges are Arabs. You cannot call such a country an apartheid state. The truth is, whether you like the outcome of Israeli elections or not, it is the only democracy in the region. Hamas, I don't respect women's rights. They don't respect minorities' rights. They want to impose their fundamentalist ideology on the people of Gaza, and indeed, given the chance, on the people of the West Bank. Now, so this trotting out this apartheid word time and time again, how can a one-person, one-vote state be an apartheid state?
It's not a one-person state.
Which allows parliamentarians from the Arab communities to serve in parliament, be an apartheid state. How can a state that allows Arabs to serve on the Supreme Court be an apartheid state? It just is not based
on... Read the report and you'll see.
It is language which is used.
Read in the report and you'll see how it's possible.
Now, I'm going to respond to your substantive point, which is about... I want to answer the question, which is about the prospects for peace.
Yeah.
Because on all sides of the argument, I would hope People want to see peace and justice. So my view would be that the first thing that has to happen is Hamas have to be defeated in this war for once and for all, and their terrorist apparatus and leadership has to be dismantled, and they can have no future part in the running or the control of Gaza. Second of all, there has to be normalization, I hope, between Saudi Arabia and Israel as soon as this war is over, or as soon as possible after the war is over. And I believe that once that happens, it will change the nature of the whole relationship between much of the Arab world, much of the Jewish world, and Arabs and Muslims around the world. So that is absolutely crucial. By the way, it's one of the reasons why Iran insisted that Hamas did what they did at the moment. The last thing Iran and Hamas want is normalized relations between the Saudis and the Israelis. And the third element of this is the world has to get real about the threat of Iran. Whatever needs to be done has to be done to prevent Iran getting a nuclear weapon. So I would argue, as part of having got rid of Hamas's capacity and capabilities, having reached an agreement, normalized relations between Israel and the Saudis, I believe that part of that agreement, there has got to be an agreement about the governance of Gaza and the West Bank, which gives the Palestinians maximum autonomy, certainly no military capacity. There can be no military capacity, maximum autonomy, and a massive economic investment program for both the Gaza and the West Bank. And also a signing of a piece of paper which says full and final resolution. What full and final resolution means is that we give up our aspirations and our ambitions to destroy the world's only Jewish state, because those Israelis, Jews around the world, are never, ever going to agree to any process which does not preserve and protect the world's only Jewish state. It is our only insurance policy against what has happened to Jews through the generations and in the most horrendous circumstances during the Holocaust. So no, the vast majority of Jewish people around the world, the vast majority of Israelis, will never support any resolution which does not protect beyond any reasonable doubt the security of a Jewish state, the state of Israel. Alongside that, though, I fully support the notion of maximum autonomy, dignity, and the best possible quality of life and standard of living for all Palestinians, but they cannot be governed by people who are committed to the destruction of the state of Israel. No other democracy in the world would tolerate a scenario where they reached an agreement with a neighbouring entity or country that was controlled by terrorists committed to its destruction. No other democracy in the world would agree to that, including the United Kingdom.
So let's go back to the question that Ivan asked you a couple of minutes ago. How can you call Israel an apartheid state when people get votes and it actually counts?
Well, like first of all, if anybody wants to know, the report is a very conclusive report. So you can read the report and you'll see how Israel is an apartheid state. I'm not going to recount the entire report, but I can give you examples. Like I said, Israel governs 7 million Palestinians. Only 2 million of those are citizens of the state of Israel, and they do have limited rights, including voting. But that does not preclude the massive discrimination in which they exist. And anybody that has ever visited the country can see that there are vast differences between the Palestinian communities of citizens of Israel and the Jewish communities of citizens of Israel, even in the places where they live, in terms of distribution of water and so on. I mean, a little known fact that people like to ignore is that Mekorot, for example, which is the agency that controls all the water, only provides 3% of the water to the Palestinian population. So that's why Palestinians always have issues with water, even the ones who are citizens of Israel. Home demolitions in the Nakba alone, in the southern part of the country, there are about over 2,000 home demolitions per year. How many of those do you think are demolished the homes of Jews? Zero. And could it be that only Palestinians built without a permit? And so on and so on and so on. So Israel is an apartheid state. The 5 million Palestinians are governed without any rights. These are three and a half million Palestinians who live in the West Bank, and the 2 million or over 2 million in the Gaza Strip. And then there are limitations and restrictions both in policy and in practice against the Palestinian citizens of Israel, even in terms of their representation you know, in the Knesset, in the parliament. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here, obviously, and read the entire report to you. The report is out there. Suddenly, the Zionists don't like amnesty because they came out against the Zionist state. And so suddenly amnesty has no
organization
because they came out and they basically validated what Palestinians and others have been saying for decades, which is that in 1948 Israel established an apartheid regime at the expense of Palestinians, having destroyed and burned and pillaged Palestinian towns and villages, having stolen Palestinian property, stolen Palestinian money, stolen Palestinian cities, public spaces, and so on, and then pretended that they made the desert bloom. So the state of Israel, this apartheid state, was created upon the destruction of the Palestinian people. And now we hear Zionists sit around and say how much they want to see the Palestinians have limited rights and autonomy. Why in the world should Palestinians agree to anything but a full, free, liberated Palestine from the river to the sea with equal rights? Okay. I can't see why any Palestinian would ever agree.
Okay.
But back to your question, the apartheid state has been very well established. I remember as a child seeing the differences between how I grew up in Jerusalem and the Palestinian neighborhoods. I didn't know the word apartheid, but it was obvious that there was massive racial discrimination against the Palestinians. And it's been part and parcel of this history, of the short history of the state of Israel from the very beginning. It was and is an apartheid state without any question.
Okay, so now we've only got a few minutes to respond. I know you want to ask a question, but we don't really have so much time. So I'm going to give you each a minute to have a closing statement, and then we'll finish off.
Well, I assume, and I say this genuinely, that your father was proud to be a hero fighting for Israel in the 1967 war. So he did not believe when he was doing that, he was representing some evil apartheid state. I'm sure you don't believe that of your father. And I'm sure he didn't believe that he was doing. He believed he was fighting a just war to protect a Jewish state against Arab nations that wanted to destroy it. So I think you really need to address that point, frankly. I would also say to you, in all your responses to me, you have never acknowledged Oslo at once. You've never acknowledged Oslo. You've never responded to my point about Barak and Olmert's offers. And you do not seem to believe that any responsibility for the governance of the West Bank and the Gaza is down to the appalling, frankly, the weak and corrupt leadership on the West Bank and the terrorist and fundamentalist leadership of the Palestinians in Gaza. You don't believe that the lives of ordinary Palestinians are blighted in any way by their own either terrorist leadership or corrupt and weak and ineffective leadership. It's all the responsibility, according to you, of the Israelis. That simply does not stack up. Back to the point, there was no occupation of Gaza. In 2005, Israel left as the world demanded of it. And Israel left and the Palestinians could have grown and developed and invested in Gaza and turned it into a wonderful home for the Palestinian people. Instead, Hamas overran it within days and turned it into a terrorist enclave, which was a threat every single day. We're not even mentioned in this interview, the horrendous rocket attacks. And I would ask you finally, are you prepared today to call upon Hamas to release all of the Israeli hostages that they currently hold? Are you prepared? You're not prepared to condemn what they did on October the 7th because you're in denial that what happened when it clearly did. Are you prepared to call upon Hamas today to release all of the ordinary civilian Israeli hostages that are currently being held in Gaza?
Well, let me counter that. Are you prepared to call on Israel to release all thousands of political prisoners that it's holding? Are you prepared
not to release terrorists? No, I'm not prepared to condemn.
Excuse me. Are you prepared to condemn Israel's vicious attacks against Gaza for decades and decades, murdering thousands upon thousands of civilians, using illegal phosphorus that burns children, burns women? I've got friends who have lost. I've just got notice today of a Palestinian friend of mine in Gaza who lost 29 family members. Are you willing to stand up now and condemn that? Because that is the source of the problem. The source of the problem is not the resistance of the Palestinians, who never had a military force, by the way. The source of the problem is the state of Israel that uses the most cutting edge weapons on the face of the earth, the most deadly weapons of the face of the earth to massacre savagely massacre civilians, not only in the West Bank, and not only in the Gaza Strip, they do it in the West Bank, they use other means to kill Palestinians in other places. But this latest attack, what we're seeing now, this savagery, this ongoing savagery with people like yourself, unashamedly say you support. You call this self-defense. Palestinian fighters are still fighting against the Israeli military, and Israel is massacring civilians. So obviously, the massacre of civilians is not affecting the Palestinians. Israel is massacring, and Israel is admitting, and Israeli prime minister and defense minister, they are admitting that they are murdering civilians. They are admitting the Palestinians deserve to die. What does it mean when the minister of defense says that they are all living animals or something? What does it mean when the prime minister says that they are Amalek? These are code words to justify murder of civilians. Don't interfere. Don't interrupt me. Don't interrupt me. You're standing on a very, 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 very precarious moral argument right here. I'm telling you this right now. You are supporting one of the worst cases of murder of civilians we've seen in a very long time, which is what Israel is doing in the Gaza Strip. You have no right to ask me questions. You are the one that needs to be in defense here. You're the one that needs to explain how dare you support the state of Israel, which has been engaged in apartheid and which has been engaged over the last month with the most vicious, vicious, savage. And all this is really is not even a strategic attack. This is an act of revenge. It's an act of revenge. An act of revenge. Why are you interrupting me? Why are you interrupting me? This is an act of revenge by a military force that has been humiliated, because that's what happened on October the 7th. The Israeli military was humiliated. The state of Israel was shown to be nothing more but a paper tiger. And what we're seeing now, this savage slaughter of innocent people in Gaza, which you justify and the Israeli government justifies, the savage slaughter we're seeing now is an act of revenge. That's what we're seeing. And if you choose to deny, I'm not the one in denial here. I have been stating historical fact every single moment of this conversation. You are the one who is in denial. You're repeating lies. You're repeating lies that have been refuted recently, and you're repeating lies that have been refuted historically.
Did you follow the
news fighting for the education? Either you need to update your education. You need to update your education or update the lies. These lies. Well, I don't know. You're talking while I'm talking, so this is pointless. You need to either update the lies, because the Zionist lies are falling on deaf ears now, or you need to update your education. I don't know if you're a liar or if you're ignorant, but it's one of the two for sure, because everything you've said over the last hour or so, you've repeated over and over and over again. The exact same lies. So you're either lying or you're ignorant. I'm not sure. I don't know you well enough. I've been consistently stating historical fact, things that are well known, things that are well documented. And you are standing here, sitting here, trying to show the world to pretend that this savagery against civilians in Gaza is somehow justified. Shame on you for either being ignorant or being a fool. I'm not sure which one it is.
Well, the personal abuse sums it up. I mean, when people resort to personal abuse, they've lost the argument.
This is not abuse.
And debates like this. You've never answered one fundamental question. Did your father believe, an Israeli hero, that he was fighting for an evil and apartheid state in 1967? Did he?
I wrote a book about this. You're welcome to read it. I wrote a book called General Son, Journey of an Israeli in Palestine. I have copies here behind me. You're welcome to purchase the book and read about my father and what he thought.
Well, very good self-promotion there, at least.
You admitted time and time again in this interview, this is a one person, one vote country. You've admitted that. Secondly, you have not once addressed Oslo, Rabin, Olmert. You've not mentioned those peace processes. On one occasion, you have not addressed the point. You said no Israelis have ever believed in a two-state solution. You have never once in your responses to me, in your discourse, dealt with Olmert, Barak's offers, and Oslo. Never once dealt with that. You never dealt with any of those issues in your discourse.
I address the issues that I believe are relevant and important.
Issues you believe are relevant.
Not what you believe is irrelevant important. You're not running the company.
Okay, brilliant. Miko, thanks so much for coming on. Ivan, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Ellie. Thank you.
Thank you.